Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, you're welcome back. It is Thursday evening. John Giles is on the line. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
I know you were on earlier in the week with Joe paying tribute to the late Tony Dunn, and if people want to listen back to that, they can on the Off the Ball app. And Tony Dunn, in many ways, I think sums up why people have really enjoyed this series that you've done over the last 3 months while football has been on pause, because he's a player from a generation that we wouldn't have seen a huge amount about, but you have that ability to compare the players from the 60s with the modern day players. And it's funny, the FAI are picking their all-time Ireland team online at the moment, and they were at left back, and Tony Dunn got 1% of the vote because, well, those who were voting would never have seen him and would
exactly,
know little or nothing about him. So
yeah.
We've had any amount of messages saying how much they enjoyed us. And I think that is one of the reasons why, that getting to talk about these players from the 60s, 70s that maybe we don't talk enough about anymore.
Ah, well, to be fair, Nathan, you know, the younger people wouldn't remember them. And like Tony goes back the same time as I did.
Mm.
And I used to find when I was doing the television, when I was talking to young people, you said, "Did you actually play football?" Because, you know, they just wouldn't remember. And I think people who are interested in football want to know.
Mm.
You know, they would have heard about Tony Dunn and other players of my time. And like when I was a kid, I wanted to know about the players before me that I'd never seen play. You know, I never got any satisfactory answers, really. Even talking to Don Revie, I'd say, "Well, what was so-and-so like?" He was a great player, but I never got the reasons why he was. So I think when people are interested in football, they want to know, that even though they didn't see Tony Dunn, what type of player was he and what was he like and how did he do?
Mm.
Because, you know, the history goes back a long time, Nathan, as we know. And Tony was a terrific, he'd be a terrific player today. And, you know, people say to me, would he be able to play today? I think the great players of today would have been great players in my day. And the great players of my day would have been great players today, Nathan.
Yeah, and as you say, as you go back and the history of the game and the club that we're going to talk about today as well, I think encapsulates that, because what we're doing from 1960, if you were to go back through the history of the game, Everton's greatest ever player, Dixie Dean, pre-Warrior, is probably the most famous player of that generation. And again, don't know and haven't seen footage, but that you like that to be passed down from generation to generation, just the talent, and as you say, why were they so good?
Well, I tried to find that out myself, because I've got friendly with two players that were playing, they're old players that we'll be naming later on, which was Tommy Eglinton and Peter Farrell.
Mm.
And I actually met them, and I think they were there with just as Dixie Dean was finishing playing, and you know, they were two gentlemen. And I asked about Dixie Dean, and he said, "Oh, he was a great player." Because I think he scored 60 goals in one season, Nathan.
Mm.
You know,
at
the top level.
Incredible.
But I still didn't get to know why or how he was.
Huh. Yeah, well, you're doing the nation a service then over the last few weeks, because we're very much finding out why and how. You mentioned Peter Farrell there and Tommy Eglinton. Everton, down through the years, have always had such a strong connection with Ireland, right up to present day with their current captain, Seamus Coleman. But so many people of a certain generation supported Everton because 50s, 60s, it was full of Irish players.
Yeah, it was. Everton had a huge club now. They were a huge club in my day. But there was always a great interest in them, Nathan, because at one stage, they fielded six Republic of Ireland players. Do you want to name them?
Yeah, I have them here in front of me. Yeah. Jimmy O'Neill, Don Donovan, Tommy Clinton, Peter Farrell, Georgie Cummins and Tommy Eglinton.
Yeah, all in the one day. I was very lucky. I played with my first international match was with Georgie Cummins. And I met Peter Farrell and Tommy Eglinton over the years. In fact, we used to get the boat back. Joe Carlin and my late Joe Carlin, Dublin lad, played with Manchester United, get the boat back to Liverpool. And one of the times we met Tommy and Ego, we used to call him, Peter Farrell and Ego, on the boat, and they very kindly asked us up to have a meal, which was a big deal for us in those days, in the restaurant.
Right, you know? Brilliant.
And there were two gentlemen.
Yeah, and that is obviously part of the connection as well. So many Irish players,
connection,
also
huge connection. Actually, in my day, loads and loads of people, and you found it yourself when people were asking you, I believe, when are we going to do Everton? There was always a huge connection with the Irish people and Everton.
Yeah, so easy for Irish people, even in that day and age, to get access to Liverpool, to get the boat across, and to see that level of quality football.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, there was always a huge and great following for Everton.
Yeah,
in my day, and that's come back a long time.
So let's go through this team. Since 1960, Everton have had periods of success. You went and battled against the great Everton side that won a couple of league titles in the 60s, early 70s. They had a brilliant team under Howard Kendall in the mid 80s, and then had a good team as well under David Moyes that finished in the top four in the Premier League era. So there's a good base to pick from. So we'll get into it then, and we'll start with the goalkeepers. Your shortlist, so we'll continue with the same pattern. I'll give the shortlist of players you've put forward, and then you can tell us who you've selected. So the goalkeepers, Neville Southall, Nigel Martin, Gordon West and Tim Howard.
Yeah, and I've gone for Neville Southall, Nathan. There's some good goalkeepers there. I mean, they've had some great players over the years, no doubt, but they're good goalkeepers. But Neville Southall, I think I picked him for the Welsh team as well, Nathan, was really outstanding. He was up there with, you know, Pat Jennings and Shilton and these guys, Banks, in his day.
Footballer of the Year as well in 1985.
Was he? I didn't know.
And that was because we'd be going through it, the amount of quality players that Everton had in that team.
Yeah.
That for their goalkeeper to be Footballer of the Year shows just the level he was at.
Yeah, he was outstanding in their successes, no doubt.
So Neville Southall is the goalkeeper, as you say, was in your Wales team as well. You're going to go with a back three, so three centre halves. We'll chat about some of the fullbacks that you could have selected if you wanted to go down that route, but we'll go through the centre halves first. So your shortlist for the first selection: John Hurst, Roger Kenyon, Brian Lebone, Mick Lyons, and Richard Goff. Who've you gone for?
I've gone for Seamus. I think he's been as good as any of them, Nathan. He's not finished yet. I think he can get better, but I think Seamus Coleman has been terrific. I think his attitude in the Irish team and the Everton team's captain, as we know, is brilliant. I think he's a great lad. Gives his best in every match he plays, and he'd be up there in any generation. The generations that we've gone through there, he'd be there, and he'd be a top man.
Yeah, because Ireland have always, down through the years, particularly over the last couple of decades, had brilliant right-backs, brilliant full-backs in general, and it's hard to compare it through the generations as to where Coleman is compared to a Gary Kelly or a Dennis Irwin. But I know you've always rated him incredibly highly, both for his character and his attitude, but in terms of just sheer talent and technical ability, how do you rate Coleman?
Oh, he's very good. I think he's excellent. He's quick. He's well prepared to get on the ball. He makes the best use of it when he gets there. Good cross of the ball, Nathan. He's top class lad.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the attitude, and he has the ability. Excuse me.
The other players you had in that shortlist for right back were Alex Parker, Gary Stevens, Tommy Wright, and Sandy Brown. Sandy Brown was a name that immediately stood out because you've spoken about this before. There was a famous game between Leeds and Everton back in the 60s where Leeds sort of made their name and a real standout fixture down through the years.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was the first year back in the first division for Leeds, and Everton had just won the league the previous year. So I think we had a bit of a reputation as being hard nuts, but Everton had some real hard nuts in them. One of them was Sandy Brown. He was a Scottish fullback, Nathan. Mm. He was a bit wild, to say the least. But I was playing on the right wing, and he was marking me.
Right.
And we got into a little bit of collision, fell on the ground, and he punched me on the ground. And the referee is standing next to us. And the referee sent him off. Now, in those days, you had to do something really bad to be sent off. But Sandy Brown was sent off, and the crowd were going crackers about it. Like, I think the crowd thought, we'll show these guys a lesson today with what we have.
Mm.
Because there's a lot of players, Sandy Brown, Jimmy Gabriel, Johnny Morrissey, these were all hard nuts, experienced pros. But our lads didn't back down, so we kept at it. We went to goal in front, and again, the crowd made the crowd wild. And then shortly after that, Sandy Brown punched me. He was sent off, made him wilder again. And then there was a crossfield ball. Willie Bell, our fullback, was going for it and sent one of the forwards. And they clashed, and the two of them went to the ground. and the crowd went totally nutters. Totally. They were nearly getting on the pitch. And right. It was the first time ever, and I don't think it's ever seen, has happened since, the referee took the two teams off the pitch, Nathan.
To try and settle you down?
To settle it down. I mean, there was no barriers in that day. The crowd, I'm telling you, were nearly, very nearly getting onto the pitch. So he took us off, I think, for about 10 or 15 minutes. First time it's ever happened, till everybody cooled down, and then we went back on and played in the match. And Sandy Brown was the major cause of it, really.
And I was reading the match report, and all of that happened in the first 5 minutes of the game.
Well, it happened early on. Definitely happened early on. And I think it was longer than 5 minutes now, because we had gone one in front at that stage, which didn't, the crowd weren't pleased about that. And then there were a couple of incidents, including Sandy Brown's, before he took us off the pitch.
Billy Bremner, it seems, set the tone. He floored Fred Pickering to start. Then Fred Pickering got revenge on Jack Charlton. And then there was your tackle on Sandy Brown, which was described as a tackle of undue vigour.
Wasn't Nathan, he would tackle me. He tackled me. I was on the ball. He took me down, and the two of us fell on the ground.
Right.
And while we were on the ground, he was sort of on top of me, and he punched me. And the referee was standing behind, just next to us. I'm telling you, in those days, you had to do a lot to be sent off. And he was sent off straight away,
right,
which got the crowd going. And then there was a crossfield ball. There was a clash between the two of them went, got head injuries, Willie Bell and the Everton player. But the crowd were in such a state that we were the demons, and we were at fault for everything, and that's when the referee made the decision to take the two teams off the pitch. I don't think it's ever happened since, and it never happened before. That's how hot it was on the day.
And that Leeds team were involved in many battles down through the years and many tough tackling games. Was that game, when you look back, exceptional? Was it out of control?
It was more out of control than any of the other previous matches, as far as the crowd was concerned.
Right.
Like, the crowd were really up. I think they'd won the league the year before. They'd some hard lads in the team. Mm. And we had a bit of a reputation. Not much of a reputation at that stage. We're only our first year in the first division. But I think the attitude was, we're going to show these guys what it's all about. And it didn't happen. And we went on to win the match as well, because we were a goal up, which made it worse and worse all the time, you know.
Right.
And I loved Goodison. I loved playing at Goodison. I never had any experience of that since then, all the times afterwards when I played there. I mean, Goodison was a great atmosphere. It was a great pitch to play on, great team to play against. So that was a very unusual day, as you can imagine. First time ever that the two teams were taken off to cool down.
Well, listen, John, we'll be getting in touch with that local newspaper to rewrite the history books, that you were very much the innocent party, that he tackled you, and
definitely,
that the undue vigour was very much on Sandy Brown's side.
I know I'm joking, but it's true. I mean, I was no saint myself, but on that particular day, I definitely wasn't at fault.
Yeah. All right, but Seamus Coleman is your man who gets in at right back. The left backs then, Keith Hughton, Phil Neville, Mick
Meehan. Sorry, Nathan, I don't know if you explained to the viewers. I'm only putting the they're not in the team that I'm actually picking tonight.
Yeah, these are
the
sort of extras.
I have to pick the full backs anyway, but there's two extra really. The team I'll be picking will be later on. Sorry, Nathan.
So the left-backs who aren't going to make it then, you'd Keith Hughton, Phil Neville, Mick Meehan, Ray Wilson and Leighton Baines.
Yeah, I've gone for Ray Wilson.
One of the greats.
Well, he was one of the greats. He moved to Everton in exchange for Mick Meehan to go to Huddersfield. You know, Mick was a good pal of mine. Mick was a terrific player. And I never said it to Mick, but I didn't think it was good for Mick. I thought he went down too low, Nathan.
Right.
Huddersfield were in the second division, weren't really going anywhere. And it was a straight swap for him and Ray Wilson. But Mick was a terrific player as well. Played for the Irish team quite a few times. A really, really good player. But that was none of my business. I never said it to Mick. But Mick was too... I thought he was too good a player to be going from Everton, having won the league championship the previous year, to be going down into the second division. But Ray Wilson was a terrific player. Actually, he won the Cup in 66 with Everton.
Mm.
And a few weeks later, he was playing in the World Cup as a World Cup winner.
Yeah.
He was excellent, excellent player, Nathan.
So let's get into the team then. We already have our goalkeeper. It's a back three, so a 3-4-3 formation. The first selection, John Hurst, Roger Kenyon, Brian Lebone, Mick Lyons or Richard Gough?
Well, I've gone for Brian Lebone.
Mm.
Brian Lebone was before your time, Nathan, and a lot of people's time. He was there when they won the league in 1964. He's quite a young lad. And he was there again when they won it in 70. And he took over from Jack Charlton as the centre-half in the England team. He was a top-class player. He was at Everton as a kid. Real Evertonian he was, but a top-class player.
One of those one-club men as well was at Everton in the first-team squad for 13 years. Centre-back only booked twice throughout his career.
Yeah.
Does that sort of sum up the sort of player he was?
Yeah, good, tall, well, big lad, good in the air, good on the ground as well, Nathan. He'd be able to play today.
Right.
Playing it out from the back. You know, he'd have no problem with that. And he was a top player for Everton for a good number of years.
Yeah, it's interesting you say he ended up succeeding Jack Charlton in the international side.
Yeah.
He could have been part of the squad for the World Cup win in 1966, but he was getting married around then, so he asked not to be considered.
I think that's true. But I think he knew he wasn't going to get in the team because you had Bobby Moore, you had Big Jack, and Norman Hunter would have been next in line. So he must have felt, well, whatever happens, I'm not going to be playing anyway. And I'd say he was probably getting a bit of pressure from the missus anyway, Nathan.
Let's look at the other centre halves then. Another selection: Julian Lescott, Martin Keown, Kevin Radcliffe, Ashley Williams, or Richard Dunn.
Yeah, I've gone for Kevin Radcliffe.
Of that great team of the 80s.
Yes, he was quick, he was good, he was captain. He was a good lad, good all-round player, very quick, good defender.
That Everton team, just how good were they? Because that was a Liverpool side winning European Cups who were every second year almost sharing league titles with Everton. They had some unforgettable FA Cup finals as well. But Liverpool are very much seen as the team of that decade, of that generation. How close were that Everton side to them?
Well, they matched them for a couple of seasons, or two or three seasons, Nathan. You know, they won the league and they won the Cup and they won the Cup Winners' Cup, I think, at that particular time. So it broke the Liverpool stronghold at that particular time, but they didn't hold it for too long. Well, nobody else did against Liverpool, but it was a great effort for them to do what they did at that particular time.
Mm. The final centre back then, your shortlist is Phil Jagielka, Derek Mountfield, Dave Watson, David Weir, and Alan Stubbs.
Yeah, I've gone for Derek Mountfield.
So Radcliffe's centre half partner during those years.
Yeah. And apparently scored a few goals, Nathan. Mm. You know, from corner kicks, free kicks. He's one of those lads that can come up and get you a few goals. But he was a steady player as well, and they were a good pair between them. Good combination.
All right, so the three centre-halves, Brian Lebone, Kevin Radcliffe and Derek Mountfield. We need to take a very quick break and we'll go through the midfielders and the attackers. It's John Giles, all-time Everton 11.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The Pat Kenny Show.
On tomorrow's programme, Helen Clark, former New Zealand Prime Minister, on stalling the virus. Alistair Campbell on all the uncertainty in the UK. We remember the fall of Saigon and the lessons for the US exiting Afghanistan. Minister Regina Doherty on going back to work with or without government help, as well as all the breaking news.
The Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to spiritmotorgroup.ie.
Tomorrow morning at 9.
On News Talk.
Home. Sawale. We're at home a lot these days, but we can still explore with the TG Cahir player. Explore the home of Irish content. Home to award-winning documentaries. Home to critically acclaimed series. Home to culture, trad music and sport. Explore Ireland from the comfort of your home. Explore the TG Cahir Player app. Now available to download for free. Gachot. Worldwide. TG Cahir. Sunna Sawale.
At Renault, we want to be the first to bring you Buy Now, Pay Later. Our new 3-2-1 offer gives you three unmissable reasons to buy a new car. Three, that's 3 months real deferred payments. Plus two, 2.02% APR. Huge savings with Renault Bank. Plus one, €1,000 cashback. Yes, you get all three. Buy now, pay later from Renault. Visit your local Renault dealer today. Offer is made under hire purchase agreement subject to lending criteria. Terms and conditions apply. See Renault.ie.
Harvey Norman is here to help. Our spacious stores have reopened with our team practicing social distancing to keep us all safe. So if you need it now, you can get it at Harvey Norman. A new home appliance to replace an old faulty one. essential tech to stay connected, or even a bigger sofa or better mattress to make staying home more comfortable. Shop safely in store or online with click and collect and home delivery available. We're here to help. Harvey Norman, your appliances, technology, furniture and bedding specialists. Go!
At Super Value, we have everything you need this week. Like Super Value Fresh Irish Sirloin Steak, save 33%. Mix and match with our delicious selected range of barbecue meats, any three for €10. This week, Super Value 7 offers like iceberg lettuce, only 49 cents. And Casiero del Diablo Cabernet Sauvignon, €9. Rest assured, at Super Value, we're there for you. Enjoy alcohol responsibly.
Are you concerned about sanitization for your home, workforce, buildings or vehicles? If you are, Sanity System is an award-winning portable sanitization system currently being used by business and government agencies. It is available for rent or purchase. Find out more by visiting sanitysystem.ie.
COVID-19 is a highly infectious disease in our community. To slow the spread of COVID-19, everyone arriving to Ireland from overseas is asked to self-isolate for 14 days. All passengers must now complete a COVID-19 passenger locator form, which may be used to check that you are staying where you said you'd be. These measures will help protect everyone from COVID-19. You'll find answers to your questions about these new rules on gov.ie/locator form. Stay home. Stay safe. Protect each other. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
And get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, we're going through John Giles' all-time Everton 11. We've Neville Southall in goals, a back three of Brian Lebone, Kevin Radcliffe and Derek Mountfield. Let's get into the midfield, John, then. You've gone with four midfielders. I'll go through the first shortlist. Peter Reid, Jimmy Gabriel, Dennis Stevens or Howard Kendall?
Yeah, I've gone with Howard Kendall, Nathan.
Obviously, younger listeners will know Howard Kendall as one of Everton's greatest ever managers. What sort of player was he?
He was a very, very good player. In fact, he was a very talented lad, but he never got an England cap, which is most unusual, Nathan, because there were, you know, a lot of people were getting caps in those days. A lot of competition as well, but he was certainly good enough to get it to be capped. You know, he wouldn't have disgraced himself playing at international level. So he was part of the big trio at Everton at that particular time.
What type of midfielder was he then? Was he box to box? Was he someone who liked to get on the ball?
No, he got on the ball. He wasn't particularly quick, Nathan, but he's good control of the ball, good passer of the ball. Played right side of midfield at that particular time. But he was a good all round player. Actually, there was a story that when he was he played at Preston. And Shankly was interested in him, and Everton were interested in him, and it looked like he was going to Liverpool. And apparently, he had to ring Shankly to say that he'd chosen Everton. And I don't know if this is true or not, but Shankly's reaction was, "Is that right? Well, I didn't really want you anyway."
Couldn't take the rejection.
No. But Liverpool were going better than Everton at that particular time,
Obviously, somebody with a brilliant understanding of the game as well, then, Howard Kendall, in the way he was able to go on and manage Everton to so much success during the 80s.
Yes, oh, he had a great time, Nathan. He did a big job with them. You say, you know, Liverpool were the team at that time. They were dominating almost everything. And to do what he did at that time, which was to break that, was a really top-class job.
Let's move on then. Your next shortlist, Asa Hartford, Ross Barkley, Alan Ball, Steve McMahon, Thomas Gravesen. Who have you gone for here?
I have to go for Alan Ball, Nathan. Well, I don't have to. I want to.
Yeah.
He was one of the best.
The 1966 World Cup final was repeated in full at the weekend. It was on Channel 4, and I think it was the first time I've ever watched the full match. Alan Ball must have covered every blade of grass in that match. It was incredible, the energy he had.
Yeah, he did that in every match, Nathan. He had a squeaky voice there. You know, when you hear his squeaky voice, you could have a go at him over his squeaky voice. But he was full of energy, could get on the ball, took responsibility, played in the middle of the field. He was a top player. Actually, I played with him for a while, Nathan, when I was nearly finished playing in Philadelphia.
Okay. What type of character was he?
He was good, bubbly.
Right.
There was talk of one time going to Leeds.
Okay.
So I don't know how he would have got on with Bremen, because the two of them were bubbly personalities and terrific players. But he was one of those full-of-life lads. And he was like that on the pitch, you know, plenty of energy, plenty of go in him.
Yeah.
Top notch.
That would have been a real unholy trinity of Bremner, Giles and Alan Ball in the middle of midfield.
Well, funny enough, we used to do, apart from that particular year when they won the league in 70, we used to do quite well about him, because we weren't too badly off with Billy, myself and Eddie Gray, you know.
That is for sure. It was an interesting tussle, no doubt.
Oh, so, good, great games against him, yeah.
Is it doing him a disservice to just talk about his energy and putting himself, how much he put himself around when he was in possession of the ball? Like,
brilliant! Very one-footed, very right-footed.
Okay,
but very quick-witted player. He wasn't a long passer of the ball. Now and again, very seldom, but he wasn't known as a long passer of the ball. But at close quarters, his control was good, very quick, little 1-2s, and then he was on his way, and he scored a fair amount of goals as well.
Mm.
When he was at Everton, I mean, especially at Everton, he wasn't a striking midfield player. He was a genuine midfield player who could get a few goals for you as well. He was really one of the best.
So you have two of that holy trinity, as they were called, in your midfield. Let's move on and see if the three of them get in. You've Gary Speed, Colin Harvey, Dave Thomas, Stuart McCall, and Alan Whittle.
Yeah, I've gone for Colin Harvey. I've gone for the Trinity.
How did the three of them play together then in midfield?
Well, Howard Kendall was on the right-hand side.
Okay.
Alan Ball was in the middle, and Colin Harvey was to the left. And they had another player I would love to have, I couldn't take him in, Johnny Morrissey, on the left wing. He was a bit like John Robertson. Remember I was explaining John Robertson? Johnny Morrissey was like that. And he was left wing, but he was a total hard nut as well, where he could really play. Always wide, Nathan. You know, so they could always find him. You know, he was a terrific player. I just couldn't put him in the team. I was very tempted to. So they could find him easily enough. And he had ability as well. You know, he could go take people on. He could chip a good fullback. So he had a lot going for him. But I couldn't put everybody in the team.
Colin Harvey then, Harry Catterick, who was the manager of that Everton side that won the two league titles, one in the 60s, one in 1970, he said that Harvey was the best of them, that skill and ability, Colin Harvey was the best of that midfield three. Would you go along with that?
No, he was a very, very good player. I don't know, when did they win it again, 1970, was it?
The second one.
He was a very, very good player. Technically good, good control of the ball, good pass of the ball. He wouldn't have been as energetic as Ball, in my opinion. I don't know how many caps. He didn't get many caps.
One cap.
One, yeah. And Howard Kendall got none.
Mm.
So it was Alan Ball got the majority. No, he was a very, very good player. And I think at that stage, Alan Ball would have been out of the club.
Okay.
Alan didn't last that long at Everton. He had a few seasons. Then they sold him to Arsenal. So I think it could happen with managers. I think the manager would still be there with Colin Harvey, and Alan Ball was gone. But I don't think anybody that I knew in the game would have put Colin Harvey in front of Alan Ball. I don't think so.
If people want to see Colin Harvey, they should go online, because he scored the goal that won them the league that year against West Brom, and it's just a terrific, terrific individual effort that you can get on YouTube if you want to watch it back. It's the fact then that Harvey and Kendall got one cap between the two of them, was it more just that, as they're called, the Holy Trinity, that there was something about the three of them together that just brought more out of them than they were individually?
No, well, in those days, there was only two midfield players playing.
Mm.
You know, this time, England were playing with wingers. And one of the players was Bobby Charlton. You know, so
you're not getting in there.
You're not going to get in there. And I can't think who else was with Bobby. But they were fairly regular players in the England team. So they had a lot of competition to get into to get even one cap, Nathan, at that particular time.
So
and Martin Peters was coming into as well. There was a lot of there was a lot of midfield players at that particular time, Nathan.
So you've gone with Colin Harvey, Alan Ball and Howard Kendall. Let's finish off your midfield then. Marouane Fellaini, Ian Snowden, Trevor Stephen, Johnny Morrissey, who you've just been talking about,
yeah.
Kevin Sheedy and Kevin Kilbane.
Yeah, I've gone for Trevor Stephen.
Okay.
Trevor Stephen could play on the right side or the left-hand side. He was sort of more of a midfield player, come winger, than Johnny Morrissey was an out-and-out winger. Trevor Stephen could go either side in the middle of the field as well, Nathan. I think he scored his fair amount of goals, but he was a good, very, very good all-round player.
Kevin Sheedy, if you talk to Everton supporters down through the years, they all rate him so, so highly, particularly as a left winger.
Yeah.
How did you rate Kevin Sheedy?
I did. I liked him. Nathan. Like, there's a lot of competition here. I just mentioned Johnny Morrissey. I haven't put in the team or Kevin Sheedy. Because they were two excellent players. I think Kevin was more of a midfield winger. Johnny Morrissey was an out-and-out winger. So they were different in that particular way. But Colin Harvey was part of a team that was very, very successful. I think he played in the 64, the 63 team that won the league, and then the 70. So he was there for a good while and was a huge servant for them. But again, you'd have to mention
Kevin Sheedy.
Kevin Sheedy in it. And I thought he was a terrific player for Everton, and he was a terrific player for the Irish team as well.
Yeah, 30
That's
years
what makes
ago.
It hard, Nathan. You know, you can only pick one at a time and in these particular positions.
30 years ago today, John, since Kevin Sheedy scored that goal against England.
Was it? Imagine the time, Nathan. where is the time gone?
Did you go out that night after that game?
I probably did. It wouldn't have taken much to go out, Nathan, anyway.
I'd imagine not.
That was a celebration. It's better celebrating than going out and drowning your sorrow.
Yeah, well, that is for sure. You wouldn't have found a place for Kilbane in your team, no?
No.
Just leave it at that, John.
I like Kevin. He's terrific. I've never seen anybody with as good an attitude as Kevin.
That is for sure.
Every match he played in, whatever he played, left back, left wing, he was terrific. I loved Kevin Kilbane. He did the job. Whatever he was asked to do, he did the best he possibly could. But ability wise, I wouldn't put him in the same class as these lads. But I don't mean to be disrespectful. But I think he definitely made the most of what he had.
He's
a great attitude, terrific attitude, and a great for any team.
Let's move on to your three forwards then. Big selection to go through here. Your first shortlist then: Adrian Heath, Peter Beardsley, Joe Royle, Andy Gray, Frank Wignall, Tony Cotty, and Duncan Ferguson. Who've you gone for?
I've gone for Andy Gray.
Okay.
Yeah. Andy wasn't there a long time, Nathan, but he was there at a time, as you say, when they broke the Liverpool stronghold at that particular time, and he was hugely influential in the time. I think they won the league and the cup and the cup winners' cup at the time he was there, and he made a huge difference to the team, for being a good team to be a winning team.
He was only, as you say, he was there for less than 2 years, just over 18 months, and... Yeah. Helped him to the FA Cup in 84, and then the year later winning the European Cup Winners' Cup, where he scored in the final and winning the league as well. An incredible impact he had.
He did. And that's what they needed at that particular time. And that's where I put him in the team. He actually helped them win trophies. Andy Gray came to Villa when he was a young fella. He was only 21. And he was absolutely brilliant, Nathan. Absolutely brilliant. Mm. I think he lived it up a bit. And he got an injury at Villa, and he went to Wolves, and he didn't do anything. I think Wolves were trying to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And it looked like he was totally finished, looked like it, till he went to Everton. And he transformed. He went back to, when he played at Everton, he played away. He played when he first came to England, and was hugely important and influential, as you say, with the trophies that they won at that particular time. I think if he hadn't gone there, I think they would have gone close, but wouldn't have won what they won in his particular time.
The one line that always comes up about Andy Gray is that he would have put his head where most players wouldn't put their foot.
Yeah, he was brave, but he was intelligent. But like a lot of brave lads I played with and against, and they wouldn't be particularly intelligent on the game. They'd be bravery. But Andy Gray was very, very intelligent, played in a very intelligent way. He linked it up well. he set it, let it off, and then he was up there. And he was a terrific header of ball. But he had more than that, Nathan.
The next shortlist, Fred Pickering, Alex Young, Graeme Sharp, Wayne Rooney, Roy Vernon and Lewis Saha.
Yeah, I have to, well, for all the supporters of Everton, I have to go with Alex Young.
Okay.
He was loved at his time at Goodison, Nathan. What do they call him, Nathan?
They called him the Golden Vision.
The Golden Vision. They loved him. And he played with Roy Vernon. They were a very good team when they won the league that year with Gabriel, Johnny Morrissey in it as well. They were a terrific team. But the crowd went for him. And he was idolised at Everton.
Danny Blanchflower coined the phrase. He said, "The view every Saturday that we have of a more perfect world, a world that has got a pattern and is finite, and that's Alex, the Golden Vision."
Yeah, he was a lovely player, really skillful. He wasn't such a big fella. Came deep for the ball, got on the ball, be a player, set it up, scored more than his fair share, Nathan. But the crowd. I'd say if you were running a poll for the most popular player, the players of that generation, of course, who saw him, it would have been Alex Young.
Right. There's a text in from Aaron, who said, "There's a wonderful story about a fan lost for words when trying to explain how much he loved Alex Young. In the end, he settled on this. If I found Alex Young in bed with my partner, I'd tuck him in." Clearly incredibly popular with the Everton supporters.
I
was reading up on him earlier on. His peak years were quite young, and he had some injury problems. And one of them was that he had severe problems with blisters on his feet as his career went on. Was that something that was common around then in terms of the boots and the quality of the pitches? Or
No, it wasn't. Right. I never heard of it. Never heard of it before.
Yeah.
You know, like all people, especially pre-season, you'd get blisters around your feet. Mm. But I never, ever heard it to that extent, ever. And the boots went well. The boots got better and better as we went on, Nathan, you know.
Yeah, we might come back and have a chat about that at some stage.
Well, I didn't have any problem. When I first started now, when I came to England and when I was playing 13, 14, you had to get boots that you had to break in.
Right, yeah.
And you had the big toe caps on them and that. But they by the time I was got into Manchester United team, for example, now they'd gone.
Okay,
they'd gone.
Let's rush through your last selection then. Gary Lineker, Bob Latchford, Billy Bingham, Alex Scott, David Johnson or Romelu Lukaku?
I've gone for Bob Latchford.
Okay, not Lineker.
No, well, Lineker I don't think would be an Everton legend. Mm. He was only there for 1 year, Nathan. And he scored a lot of goals, right enough, but he didn't stay long enough to become like Bob Latchford and Alex Young. And that.
Well, Bob Latchford was their top scorer for six straight seasons.
Yeah, well, that's six seasons. Gary Lineker was great at what he did, and he had a great season at Everton. But it was only a season, Nathan. He was gone, you know?
Latchford was there sort of during the little dip that they had between the 70s and the 80s, so didn't have the success probably of a lot of the players in this team. But individually, you clearly rated him very highly.
He was very good. Well, there was a lot of good players in that. Ferguson was a good player. Lukaku was in his time, but they weren't Everton. Ferguson and Pickering was there for a good while. And they had some very, very good forwards, Nathan. But I think Latchford did what was needed. Sometimes he can do more in a team that's not going so well. And as you say, he was top goal scorer for 6 years without them being the top team that they had. So he was very good. But they had some very, very good forwards.
Yeah, they certainly did. John, we're out of time. I'll run through your 11 then. It's Neville Southall in goals, a back three of Brian Lebone, Kevin Radcliffe, Derek Mountfield. In midfield, you have Howard Kendall, Alan Ball, Colin Harvey and Trevor Stephen. And the forwards, Bob Latchford, Alex Young and Andy Gray. John, great stuff. Football is back next week. We'll actually have something to talk about from the here and now. But I think we might try and continue this as well over the next few weeks as well, because that's been proven so popular. So we'll have a think about it and we'll come up with something.
Yeah, well, I think you mentioned we haven't done Celtic, Nathan. So at some stage, we'll make a bit of room and finish off with Celtic.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, John, mind yourself. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
All right, John Giles there. His all-time Everton 11 is up online right now, and you can listen back and watch back on the OTB Sports app, which is available to download wherever you get your apps. Up next, it is Michael Murphy, and then on the football show, we'll hear from Matt Doherty.